Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
What is that thing?
It's called the It. An evil that's actively spreading. If we do not act soon, darkness will fall across the universe. We're in search of warriors who can fight.
Being a warrior, embracing your faults, facing the darkness with your own light. These are the themes bursting through Ava DuVernay's Disney version of A Wrinkle in Time. The movie's received some mixed reviews, some saying it's more of a taxi ride than a grand tessering adventure. But Madeleine L'Engle's original novel was misunderstood too when first published in 1962. DuVernay's adaptation tells the story anew for a generation of children of color, specifically, who deserve to have their own powers of impetuousness, passion, intelligence, and stubbornness celebrated on the big screen. This hour on Point, A Wrinkle in Time and its message for a new generation. You can join us on air or online. Have you seen the movie? Have you read the beloved book? What did you make of the new adaptation? Were there parts that you liked or parts of the book that you missed? And what is the core message that Madeleine L'Engle's classic can be felt by and understood by and needs to be heard by young children today? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got a bunch of great folks who are going to join us to have this conversation today. First, from New York, is Aramide Tinubu, film critic and entertainment writer. Her work appears in Ebony, Jet, Essence, and IndieWire. You can see a link to her review for NBC News Think. It's headlined, A Wrinkle in Time is a Letter to Black Girls, Not Critics. And that link is at our website, onpointradio.org. Aramide, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me, Meghna.
Okay, so tell us, give us your thought. You're not one of those critics who have panned this movie, and I have to say, I saw it, I loved it. I'm just going to put it out there. I'll tell everyone reasons why for it later. But what'd you make of the adaptation?
I thought it was a really beautiful expression of girlhood and of feminist girlhood. I think so often as critics, we tend to look at things from our perspective, but not all of us were 8-year-old or 12-year-old girls, and we have to go back to that moment, go back to these specific groups of people that Ava DuVernay was trying to reach with the film. Mm-hmm. I think that it's really about being adventurous. It's about learning to be yourself. And so often, even though we are in our present society, girls are still not allowed to be who they are and to experience things. So I think it was really a beautiful coming-of-age story for girls specifically.
Yeah. And Aramide, I have to say, this is live radio, so occasionally I screw things up. I'm sorry that I was mispronouncing your name a second ago.
No problem.
But I'm going to get it right here. Now, so this message to young girls, I have to say, and especially with the casting of Storm Reid as Meg Murray, she was phenomenal. She is the heart of this film, don't you think?
Definitely. I thought she was so precocious and so smart. And I think she really understood herself in a way that I don't recall understanding myself as a middle schooler or a high schooler. There's a moment in the film where she says, sometimes I hate myself. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just such a profound thing to say. And she struggles with her identity, with her curly hair. These are all things that I think a lot of young Black girls and young women of color in particular really struggle with. And we don't get the opportunity to see ourselves expressed or represented in that way on screen.
Well, yeah, especially. So tell me more about that, because that's one of the things that I walked away from the movie feeling most powerfully, right? That here's, you know, it's a Disney film, granted, but here's as close to an authentic representation of the really core personal struggles that young girls of color are going through every single day. And it wasn't dressed up. I mean, I feel like Ava DuVernay just sort of put it on screen gently and honestly for the rest of us to say, oh, that's what it feels like.
Definitely. I think there definitely have been coming of age films for young Black women, young women of color, but they're always really hard and harsh. And I think now of Precious and of Pariah and Just Another Girl in the IRT, these films where women are really asked to overcome such huge things. And sometimes for Black girls, it's just about overcoming the things that every other girl is trying to overcome. And I thought that was so important. And I really love that DuVernay did that in this film. I think also when you look at just, you know, the nuances of being a Black girl and seeing yourself represented, we're asked to really identify with the Harry Potters and the Katniss Everdeens of the Hunger Games. And we do, but no one is ever asked to, you know, identify and see themselves in us. So that was why A Wrinkle in Time was really so important, I think.
Yeah. So I want to just hear a little bit more from the film. This is a moment a little later on in the movie where the three Mrs., again, Mrs. Witch, Mrs. What's It, and Mrs. Who, we'll talk about them in more detail a little later, but they leave Meg and Calvin and Charles Wallace, who's Meg's brother, to fight darkness on an evil planet, and they give the children gifts in order to assist in their battle. Mrs. Who, played by Mindy Kaling, gives Meg a pair of crystal magical glasses, and Reese Witherspoon's character, Mrs. What's-It, who long has doubted Meg's core strengths, actually leaves her with a surprising present.
They work well in a moment of peril, for they see that which is unfolded. Not gone, just unfolded.
Meg. Troubled, problematic Meg. To you, I give the gift of your faults. You're welcome.
You do know my faults are the bad qualities, right?
Are they really? Well, then you're all set.
Well, that's a moment from Ava DuVernay's film adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time. I'm joined today by Aramide Tinubu. She's film critic and entertainment writer whose work has appeared in Ebony, Jet, Essence, and others. And joining me now as well is Salamisha Tillett. She is the Richard S. Blank Professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor Tillett, welcome to you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what was your response to this adaptation of such a beloved book?
Well, I wrote a piece about the book being my favorite, you know, childhood book. And so I was really excited and interested in the fact that DuVernay was able to helm this amazing project. So when I saw the film, similarly, I was really gratified by the centering of the casting of Meg as an African-American girl, as a biracial African-American girl. But also just I was kind of blown away by the performance of Storm Reid, who really does carry so much of the movie's weight on her shoulders.
Yeah.
And the emotional and kind of philosophical weight, I guess, also of the book for a modern audience. So I was really excited. I've been a big fan and student of DuVernay's larger body of work. And so I was anxious also to see how some of certain signature elements of her aesthetic were going to translate into such a gigantic adventure, cinematic adventure. But you could see the through line, and you could also see her just innovating. So I really was really pleased, excited, and really just happy that another generation of moviegoers can have this film alongside the book, and particularly girls as they find their voice and kind of come into their own.
Yeah. So, you know, I wonder, I mean, by virtue of casting this story through children of color as the main storytellers in this version of A Wrinkle in Time, it also made me wonder, I mean, there's that scene in the near the beginning of the movie where Meg is being chastised by her school principal for, you know, her attitude problems at school and the challenges that she has. And, you know, the principal, her father's been missing for several years now because,
yeah.
I mean, she doesn't know he's on the other side of the universe, but her father's been missing for several years. And the principal says, well, what would your father think if he came, or what would happen if your father came through the door right now? And she just whispers, Meg whispers, well, everything would make sense again then.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I just thought, is this a cinematic representation of the absolute heartbreak that so many children have? I mean, because of their missing fathers. I mean, in the case of mm-hmm. children of color, we have mass incarceration that's taken fathers away from so many children.
Yeah, and I was so I wrote this piece for the New York Times about my own relationship to the book itself, and what I did. And so I reread it right before the movie came out because I was curious, like, why my 7-year-old African American girl self really identified with Meg so much. And so there's two things. One, this idea of abandonment, which I think children experience if they lose one parent or the other, but then also, you know, some children are more vulnerable to it. So you're talking about in terms of African American children who for a variety of reasons in terms of mass incarceration, economic injustice, are more vulnerable to having a parent absent in their household. And I just think, and I was thinking about my own child self, and my parents were separated when I was 7, and just the missing, whether it's a missing mother or missing father, but just identifying with that sense of loss and grief that Meg has, as well as anger. And I think that was something that was really poignant about the originality of Meg in the novel Wrinkle in Time, to have a girl both be angry, be brilliant, be an outsider in the early 1960s, and have that as your protagonist is pretty radical and revolutionary. And then to translate that now into a contemporary setting, that through line. And, you know, what's interesting about anger is that we have this moment in Me Too in which women are really able to express their anger in a way that we never have been before.
Yeah. Well, Professor Salamisha Tillett, stand by here for a second. And Ramide Tinubu, can you hang on over the break a little bit? Because I want to hear a little bit more from you in just a minute, if that's okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, we are talking about Ava DuVernay's film adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time. The beloved book from 1962 is seeing new life on the big screen now. Have you seen the movie and read the book? What did you make of this new version of A Wrinkle in Time? What'd you like? What you didn't? What did you not like? And what message is it telling young children today? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about Ava DuVernay's film adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time and the message that it's giving to young children today, particularly young children of color. You're hearing right now a bit of the soundtrack from the movie. It's a track called Tesseract. And on that point, let's hear a cut from the film. This is a scene where Meg's parents, they're both scientists, the Murrays, and they describe how they discovered a way to bend time and space, to make that wrinkle in time. It's a tesseract. Here's that clip. It's of Mr. and Mrs. Murray, played by Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Chris Pine, presenting their extraordinary discovery to a group of scientists.
Think about quantum entanglement. Two electrons, once bonded together, in love, if you will, suddenly separated by a galaxy, but somehow still just as connected. An unbroken union despite being galaxies apart.
And our most recent calculations show us that these fields connect us to other dimensions. Dimensions outside of the limitations of space and time. Imagine that. Imagine. Rather than enduring the oppressive rules of time and space, we could
wrinkle it. 91 billion light years traveled like that.
That's from the new movie, A Wrinkle in Time. I'm joined today by Professor Salumisha Tillich. She's a professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. And by Aramide Tinubu, who's a film critic and entertainment writer for Ebony, Jet Essence, and others. Aramide, before I let you go, I wanted to get your response to what we were talking about just before the break about the exploration of missing and imperfect parenting that this movie puts on the big screen and, you know, what message and how that might touch and reach kids who watch the film.
Certainly. I definitely felt that though Meg's father was missing, when you do see him with her and you also see her mother, they're so compassionate. They're so caring. They listen to her. I thought that was just very profound because oftentimes in coming of age stories that do center around young people of color, there's often a missing parent or a very mean parent or someone who is, you know, not really competent or able to take care of them. And with this, I felt like her father, Meg's father, I should say, was her best friend, which is why she was so desperate to yearn for him. She wanted to find him. She loved him. And I think you hardly ever see that sort of portrayal. And that's why I think a lot of kids will continue to connect to this film and to this story. Because, yes, there are lots of children who don't have their father figures or mother figures in their lives, but they often have a grandparent or an aunt or someone they yearn for and reach out for it, who comforts them. And I thought that in itself was universally relatable, particularly for young people of color.
Can I just say that when I'm... Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, you're fine.
All I wanted to say was I just, in hearing you, I was remembering the scene when Meg finally finds her father and they embrace for the first time since they'd been separated. I burst into tears.
Same. I did as well.
In the cinema. I'll admit, I just burst in. I couldn't hold it back anymore at that moment. I mean, but you were talking about young children of color specifically.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And I think that, you know, there are so many harsh representations of Black lives, of people of color. And I think this wasn't that. And that's why it was so important. I think for Black girls specifically, we're often forced into adulthood before we get into that adolescence or that teenage piece. And this really allowed Meg to sit in her adolescence, in her angst, in her anger. And that's why I think A Wrinkle in Time, the film, is so different from tons of other coming-of-age stories. She's allowed to be a little girl, and she's allowed to, you know, be kind of mean and kind of upset with the world. And she's not persecuted for it. Nothing horrible happens to her. She's not, you know, her body isn't violated. Her mind isn't violated. She's able to go on this adventure. And you see this care that she has for her little brother also, which I think so many young children, especially children of color, will relate to that sibling bond.
Well, Aramide Tinubu, film critic and entertainment writer, it's been so great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Magna. I really appreciate it.
And by the way, we have a link to Aramide's article, A Wrinkle in Time is a Letter to Black Girls, Not Critics. That link is at our website, onpointradio.org. Salumisha Tillich, respond to what Aramide was saying there about parenting and the gentle and loving presentation of parenting that Ava DuVernay has put on screen here.
I mean, I think that the mother obviously is one of those figures who is kind of carrying the weight of having her husband disappear and having to take care of these two children and raise them. And for all that we see, that they're just beloved children, and then they're loving and they're generous and they're smart. I think the father's a little bit more complicated, which I actually think is interesting, and to kind of talk about the ways in which fatherhood is represented in film, but also this kind of complicated white male father who is driven by his own ambition and curiosity, but also risks losing his family because of it. So I don't think he's a sympathetic character, but I think we're supposed to see him up against Meg, who is willing to make so many sacrifices to pursue her brother's safety as well as her father. So I think that's the kind of, when we think about the gender politics of the book and then how they kind of expand in the film, it's interesting to think about a character, a girl who stands above her father, right, and has to rescue him. And you know, readers in the 1960s and 70s are understanding this, and they're thinking about, wow, a girl who is in some ways under dismantling or upsetting a kind of patriarchal family structure and therefore patriarchal society. So I think that's one of the things that we get with this father who is not a hero, ultimately.
Yeah.
Right? The heroine is who captures our attention, and that's exciting. And Ava's vision, we have it not as an African-American father who's deeply flawed, but as a white male father,
yeah,
brilliant scientist, and is driven by that to such degrees that he literally disappears. So the other thing I think is interesting, too, is that slightly different from the book, and I don't think I'm misreading the book in this way. In the movie, he was willing to forsake Charles. And in the book, I believe it's that she's the only one who can save him. Like, she's the only one who's gifted enough.
Yeah.
And so that distinction of having him choose one child or the other, it kind of makes him a bad father. Ultimately, he asks for forgiveness at the end. But I think he's problematized in a way that is interesting and, you know, compelling as well.
Well, and I mean, the Storm Reid's performance, again, is so great that at that moment where he hugs her and asks her for forgiveness about abandoning Charles Wallace, her body language is not entirely forgiving. And I think that's exactly how, you know, a 12 or 14 year old girl would feel. I mean, it's just very, very well done. I've got another guest I want to bring in here into the conversation. But first, we've got tons of callers as well who want to join us. So let's quickly just go to Elise, who's calling from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. You're on the air, Elise.
Hi. I loved it. the reason I loved it is because I'm a mom of 3 biracial children who are now in their 20s, and to see a multiracial family on the screen, and that isn't the main story. That's not even talked about.
Yeah, it's just presented as fact. Yeah.
Yes, in fact, and remember, it wasn't long ago when we had the Cheerios commercials that were causing a ruckus, where people were like, oh my gosh, it was an interracial family. And you know, as I was raising my children in the 90s and that in the early 2000s, people were still saying, oh, what's that like? Like, this is some strange occurrence. And to see that loving family was just beautiful to me. So I just loved it.
Yeah.
I read the book.
Elise, I'm going to just jump in here and say I love your enthusiasm and thank you so much for your call. I'm sure that's something that Charlotte Jones Voiklis is enjoying hearing right now. She is Madeline L'Engle's granddaughter, and she's co-author of Becoming Madeline, a biography of the author of A Wrinkle in Time by her granddaughters. And she's joining us from New York. Charlotte Jones Voiklis, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna.
It is so terrific to have you. I mean, just, I suppose I could ask the obvious, but I don't know, is it the unanswerable question of what would your grandmother have made of this new film?
I think she would have loved it, absolutely. And I think she would have been amazed and surprised by it in the ways that we all have been, I think, sort of seeing Ava's vision of the book on screen. I think we've, you know, you have mentioned that the book had a hard time finding a publisher when it was written back in 1959.
And was it 26 or 28 rejections, something like that?
It was something like that. I can't verify the exact number, but it was many, many publishers. And they didn't understand it. They didn't think children would get it. So I think that the kinds of criticism that the film is getting really mirrors the criticism that the book received back 56 years ago, that, oh, children won't get it, and they're not looking at it from a child's point of view.
Yeah. Can I just jump in here? Because we actually have some tape of your grandmother sort of speaking broadly about some of the challenging things and themes that she wanted to have in the book and wouldn't take out. So this is Madeline L'Engle in 1975 giving a speech on writing at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York. And she's talking about why good and evil, especially the exploration of evil, is such an important part of A Wrinkle in Time. And she explains that while writing the villain of the book, the evil it, as a disembodied brain, it wasn't until later that she understood the character's greater significance.
The brain, when it is not informed by the heart, is evil. But I didn't know this consciously while I was writing. My creative intuition simply told me that that was what it had to be. It wasn't until after the book was published and someone else pointed it out to me that I understood more than I had consciously known. I had been writing with my heart more than with my mind.
That's Madeleine L'Engle in 1975. Charlotte Jones Voiklis, I mean, how much of that core theme do you think is successfully or not carried over into the film?
Oh, I think the film does a wonderful job with the main themes of the book. And that's also that evil exists, but love is stronger, and that we all have the tools to overcome it, and that we're going to have to do that work. And it's not done just once, right? I mean, in the end of the movie, Kamazats is destroyed, it appears. But they have to go back home. And one of the things that the movie does as well as the book is show that there's darkness at home as well. Mm-hmm. But that's not hopeless, because what Meg has learned and what we have learned through her and through this new universal vision of Meg that Ava's given us is that we can overcome it. So in the end, it's a very, very hopeful movie, yeah, as well as the original source material. And that piece that you played of my grandmother talking about what she hadn't realized when she was writing the book, I think, is very important too. And one of the things that she said is that with every book she wrote, she discovered or she learned that they have a life of their own. And I think she really marveled at that. And it's not every writer whose work gets to live on in this way. And she revered other artists so much as well that, you know, she recognized that to move another artist with your own creation is a wonderful privilege.
Yeah. Salome Shatila, jump in here. What are your thoughts on the point that Charlotte's making?
Well, actually, you know, I agree. And I think, thank you. You know, I'm just honored to be actually in conversation with her as well. One of the things I was thinking about when I was rereading the book, and this gets to your notion of like conformity and evil and good, and how, you know, I was at a conversation where Ava DuVernay was talking about how so much of A Wrinkle in Time informs so many science fiction films that we see or fantasy films that we see. But for me, so I agree with that, but I was also thinking about, like, The Matrix, like, you know, uh-huh, the way in which this is kind of thinking about some of the concerns and questions about conformity. And it's different, of course, because I love this idea of the heart being the thing that makes the brain, makes us all kind of morally sensitive individuals. But the idea of conformity and nonconformity, of being part of a machine or being part of a system that denies you individuality and ultimately humanity, is really an important contribution that The Wrinkle in Time kind of gives us. I mean, a lot of novels deal with these themes in, you know, for adults, deal with these themes in complicated ways. But to introduce that to children, as they're living in a world that has evil, and as they're coming out, at least in the 1950s to early 60s, of a kind of Cold War era, and on the precipice of the Civil Rights Movement, I mean, it's a really important contribution in the kind of child imagination, with the public imagination. So I'm really appreciative of that in the book. And then in the film, you know, some of the most breathtaking scenes, I thought, is where she's really kind of pushing the envelope of how we can see that tension between conformity and nonconformity in a child's, kind of from a child's point of view. So that scene where they see all those kids bouncing the ball
at the same time,
I mean, it's gorgeous. And yet, you're getting a glimpse of how oppressive this environment really is, and then it switches, right, to the beach where it's like playful and then yet that's another illusion. So I think the way that the film is trying to grapple with these complex themes is really important, because visually it's actually so it's so pretty, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the illusion of it all. And again, that kind of reflects to me some of the themes that we see with The Matrix, too. So.
Well, hang in there, Salamisha Tillett and Charlotte Jones Voiklis, because I got to take a quick break here. We are talking about Ava DuVernay's film adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time. It's bringing movie audiences to a much-beloved book that was first published in 1962. It's dealing with some big themes for kids, actually for adults even, but this time the story is told through children of color, and it's a remarkable discussion that we're having about it. Have you seen the movie? Have you read the book? What do you make of the adaptation? Do you like it? Or are there parts of A Wrinkle in Time, the book, that you think are missing that should have been in the film? Here's Let Me Live by Kehlani from the A Wrinkle in Time soundtrack. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the new Disney adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time and what message it has from a beloved book from the 1960s for a new film-going audience today. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined today by Charlotte Jones Voiklis. She is Madeline L'Engle's granddaughter and author of Becoming Madeline, a biography of the author of A Wrinkle in Time by her granddaughters. We're also joined by Salamisha Tillett. She's a professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. And I wanted to listen to another quick moment from the film. In this scene, Reese Witherspoon's character, Mrs. What's-It, this is early on in the movie, enters the Murray home unannounced, and Meg, played by the phenomenal Storm Reid, is quite wary of her presence, more wary than her little brother Charles Wallace, who's played by Derek McCabe.
Guys, she's harmless.
You're six. Come on. What do you know about harmless?
Have I ever been wrong?
Well, one of these days you might be Charles Wallace.
Oh, I highly doubt that. He's one of the greatest minds in recent history. He's prodigious. But of course, we can't take any credit for our talents. It's how we use them that counts.
It's how we use them that counts. We've got this comment from Twitter. Linda Sager Kozalski. Linda, I hope I said that right. I'm sorry if I didn't. Has written us, I'm not a person of color, but as a teenager reading A Wrinkle in Time, it was one of the very few young adult books that spoke to me in the 1970s, trying to push back the patriarchal mores of the time. Meg was my hero. She made me believe that I could make a difference. And Linda, when I read it first in the mid-80s, I felt the same way. I was especially impressed by Meg's mother, who had two PhDs, which was super awesome to read. Let's go to Rachel, who's calling from Newburyport, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Rachel.
Hi there. So I read the book when I was a kid, and I loved it. And I think what was most special about it was the way that it allowed me to imagine things differently than I had ever before as a child. And when it's made into a movie like this, it's a little upsetting because I think you lose that. Obviously, everyone sees everything the same way. And I think that children aren't allowed to like expand their imagination as they would have if they had read the book instead of seeing it as a film. But from what you guys are saying, it sounds like it's going to be pretty lovely. So maybe I'll have to watch it.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for your call. Charlotte Jones Voiklis, let me turn that to you, because this is the central challenge of any film adaptation of any book, especially one that's been so widely read and loved by so many. I mean, to the point that Rachel's making, I've seen the book, read the book and seen the movie, and there were key scenes in the book which I missed from the film. I actually thought that Ava DuVernay kind of oversimplified aspects of the ideas that Madeline L'Engle was trying to get across in the book, and I kind of missed that, I have to say, in the movie.
I don't disagree with you, and I think that one of the wonderful things about the book and sort of as I've talked to people about the book over 40 years is how deeply people love it, how much it affects them, and how much ownership they feel over it because it matters so much to them. So I think, you know, a film adaptation of a beloved book is difficult. Mm-hmm. And that what Ava has done is she's given us what she sees in the book, right? And it's going to be different from what I see or what you see or what anybody else
yeah.
sees.
Yeah, so let me put a finer point on it. And this is both mm-hmm. for you, Charlotte, and you, Salamisha. I mean, people have been writing about the biggest theme that may be missing from the movie, and that is the religious or spiritual themes that Madeleine L'Engle weaves through the entire novel. Now, there's a deep, profound sense of secular empowerment, right, in the movie version. But, you know, Madeleine L'Engle was unafraid to write a book that was about spiritual power. And I just, you know, I don't know why Hollywood's so afraid to pull that into a modern day film. And I kind of wish that Ava DuVernay had. Charlotte, your thoughts on that?
Well, I disagree slightly there because I think, yes, my grandmother was a practicing Christian, and she was deeply invested and knew the stories of the Bible. And she used those in her story. But she would also be the first person to say, just because you quote the Bible doesn't make your story Christian. And conversely, the absence of the Bible or Christian themes doesn't mean it doesn't have something to say about those deeply spiritual themes. So that is one criticism I really disagree with.
Okay. Well, let me get Salamisha. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but let me just get Salamisha Tillett's quick response to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been a little risky politically, actually, because I don't know if the screenwriters and the filmmaker are sharing the same kind of religious sensibility. So what I did appreciate about the film is, and, you know, I understand that there are people have relationships to a novel that don't translate into the cinematic adaptation of it. But I do think that we all actually look at films differently, too. So if people experience a novel differently, then one child watching the film is not going to have the same experience as another child based on a variety of factors. So I don't think you lose the individualized attachment to the experience. I think you read the book and you watch the film, and you go back and read the book. I mean, I think there's a kind of feedback loop that kind of happens with this. And another thing I was thinking about is like with The Wizard of Oz, like there are certain moments when, you know, that was a book, 1900, and then it becomes this amazing film. And I don't think that it necessarily negates one's experience with that original encounter with the book. So there's that. But I do think in terms of, I mean, there are other ways in which I think it does manifest spirituality. I don't think it necessarily manifests Christianity in the way that we may associate like certain representations of Christianity on film, but it is, I mean, when they're with the medium, the Oprah Winfrey character, for example, and just the idea of these three women. You know, my 5-year-old daughter, I asked her what her favorite part of the movie was, and she was like the women who helped her.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really compelling because they are, you know, you can think about them as takes on the idea of kind of like the three witches, or they're like these guardian angels, but they're shepherding her through this process in a way that, this is why I bring up The Wizard of Oz, like Glinda, the witch in The Wizard of Oz is a wise figure that helps Dorothy traverse the different worlds that she's in. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they're not, you could think of them as priestess, depending on how you
right.
look at them. So I don't think it's completely gone.
Charlotte, I didn't mean to interrupt you a bit earlier, but I did want to hear what Salamisha's thoughts were on this. But pick up your thought.
I think it's just important to understand that just because something isn't explicit doesn't mean it's not there. You know, I think in terms of what's missing from the book, that what I miss in the movie, that's in the book, that's not in the movie, are things, you know, there are certain, you know, from very little things like, oh, she didn't cook on a Bunsen burner,
right?
Those
right.
tiny little things,
which
is just like, oh well, to larger characters. I don't want to have any spoilers, but again, one of the things about seeing somebody else's vision of it makes you go and think about what you loved about it in the first place.
Yeah.
And so I love that that's what we're doing. So if we're talking about Aunt Beast.
That was the one I was going to say I missed the most. Absolutely. And so, you know, Charlotte and Salamisha, you both have been so terrific in joining me today. But we've also got a bunch of callers who want to get in here. And I'm looking at the clock and thinking, I really should get to them. So let me do that. Meredith is calling from Augusta, Georgia. You're on the air, Meredith.
Oh, hello. I am so happy to be talking. I read A Wrinkle in Time as an adult in my graduate program. And as a teacher, I think that the film and having children of color be represented there with the book so much in terms of female protagonists, right? Like you have Meg, who is not only strong, but she is empathetic. And I think that you don't see a lot of female protagonists portrayed in that way, where they take on a lot of this traditional masculinity in their role. And so I think it does so much. And with the witches, you know, you have just these strong, powerful females that we need to see. Not only do we need to read about them, but we need to see them represented in real time. And I think that does so much for students to have this sort of visual. So you have kids that, you know, maybe can't sit down and read an entire book, but they can sit down and watch this beautifully mastered movie.
Well, Meredith, thank you so very much for your call. Let's turn to Greg, who's calling from Charlotte, Vermont. You're on the air, Greg.
I felt in a way the movie kind of gutted the book in the sense that in the book the kids had to make hard choices and persevere and count on their character, and in the movie it just kind of happened to them or they reacted to circumstance.
Oh, interesting, Greg. Thank you so much for that call. I'll get to Charlotte and Salamisha to chime in on that, but I want to get another call in while I can. Van is calling from St. Petersburg, Florida. You're on the air, Van.
Hi, Meghna. I read this book as a child probably 10 times and loved it. And I was very sick last year and I read it with my son. I'm sorry. Who's in fifth grade now. And he loved it. And I was so happy that he loved it because I think that boys shouldn't just be reading books about boys. And so we spent a lot of time discussing it and discussing her character. And we were so excited about the movie coming out. And we went on the first day that it came out. We literally drove straight from school to the movie. We liked the movie, but we felt like too much was added in the beginning. And then there wasn't room for things in the end, like Aunt Beast.
Right.
So I didn't. Like, we were all on board with, and we knew in advance from seeing the previews, that the characters didn't look the way they were described physically in the book. And I totally see why the twins were taken out. How do you fit them in?
Right.
But it didn't make sense to me to give so much away about the dad in the beginning.
I get it. So, but then you have to sort of resolve a lot of these questions at the end. And again, I wonder if maybe Ava DuVernay just made the decision not to do that because she really was looking to see how kids would absorb this movie. But Van, thank you so much for that call. Charlotte Jones-Voiklis and Salamisha Tillett there. Just in that kind of bunch of listeners that we heard from, you heard the deep passions that this book still to this day, some 50 years later, arouses in fans of A Wrinkle in Time. I just want to come back to something that we started with in terms of exploring the significance of this adaptation of this book right now. And I can't stop thinking about Storm Reid's performance as Meg Murray. And Charlotte, I wanted to hear what you had to say about this because every trouble, every bit of self-doubt, every moment of pain and joy that Storm, through her performance as Meg Reid, portrays on screen, she got me because I kept thinking about all the 12, 13, 14-year-old girls of color there who have never seen this honest representation of themselves on screen. I mean, I have a little kid in my life who this is her life every day. And to me, if nothing else, that is the power of what this adaptation is bringing to potentially, you know, thousands, if not millions of moviegoers.
I think that's very true. And I think Storm is a revelation as Meg. And
but it's the, it's the same thing that Meg as a character when the book first came out in the 60s did for so many young girls then. I guess that's what I'm saying. That's why it's so powerful now.
Yeah, and I think she's doing it, I mean, not only for young girls of color, which I think is really important because representation does matter. But it doesn't just matter for young girls of color. It matters to me as a middle-aged white lady to see Storm, to see a girl of color on screen, and to hold, I think, as Salamisha said in her piece, to represent a new universal. For us to see Meg, a black Meg, as universal, I think is powerful not just for girls of color, which is really important, but for white folks too.
For everyone.
And I'm so happy.
Yeah. You're doing all right?
I just I'm doing fine. Thank
okay.
you. I cried too.
Let me tell you, I absolutely wept through most of this film. Salamisha Tillett, we've just got about a minute or so left here to go. Last thought today goes to you.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to echo what you all just were talking about. And, you know, in the Times piece I wrote, the title was Notions of the Universal Redefined. And I couldn't express just the joy of, like, having this black girl. We're going against so much, like, history of, like, how the universal has been defined. And oftentimes it's been defined against women and against black people and black women in particular. And so to have a black girl, the figure that we're all able to relate to, her journey of transformation, her journey of recovering her family, and just her deep courage, and ultimately her ability to defeat evil. And it's not just evil that exists in society, but as the film kind of shows it, it's that moment where there's the cool Meg versus the awkward Meg, right? And she has to choose the things about herself that are seen to be as her worst traits or her best traits, right? For us to, like, really, as audience members and readers, like, grapple with, like, loving ourselves even when those things are defined as bad, that's amazing. And
yeah.
So I'm happy this movie's there, and I'm happy the book is here.
Well, the visual representation of that moment took my breath away. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the fact that Meg is the kind of person who can calculate the parabolic trajectory of a storm-tossed tree stump.
Yes, so
girls who do science rock as well. Well, Salamisha Tillett, professor of English and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Her story, I Saw Myself in a Wrinkle in Time, But I Had to Work Hard. There's a link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Charlotte Jones-Voikless, Madeline L'Engle's granddaughter and co-author of Becoming Madeline. Such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And we're going to end this hour with one last song off the soundtrack. This is I Believe by DJ Khaled. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Best thing I ever did was believe in me. To succeed, you must believe.
We the best music.
I believe.
Another one.
A Wrinkle in Time.